The car that pulled into bay number one was a Phantom Rolls in bohemian red with matching leather. The private registration stated Viagra. Not that this man needed any stimulant. It was a constant walking erection. The plate above read the boss. The person in question was Robert Lilly. Automany? He was known as Bob the Body, being the perfect physical shape. Bob, along with his partner Stuart, since 1973, for 3 decades had been building an enormous empire that spanned across most of the east side of Sheffield, from Brightside to Attercliffe, that being where the foundries and the slaughterhouses were, the dirty side of town, east of the River Don. Most men spent all day pulling steel for 12 hours or killing cattle for 12 hours. They classed it as their manor, and any movement of money they would forbid, unless, of course, they got a cut. They'd staked out this over 30 years. To them, it was theirs, and they had their sticky fingers in every pie. Bob was also known as the Anaconda, due to him squeezing the life out of any opposition, breaking them by foul or fair means. Both men had originated from the notorious Park Hill flats and slums, gangland territory, where the protection rackets ran wild. They broke them. Bob and his partner had become so powerful, they were bigger than any mafia. They'd come out of the back-to-back red brick terraces that seemed to breed endlessly and stretch like red snakes to the skyline. Streets and streets of them. From the crucible of steel, they were forged by foundrymen and women. Sinewy stock, powerful, proud people. And each generation became tougher and tougher. Leaner and meaner. Bob and Stuart. They came from double-figure families. 10, 11, 12 people living under one tiny two-up, two-down roof. In the cobbled backyard, they usually kept livestock, chickens, pigs, goats, fed them on meagre scraps and chained them. And then, as soon as they put on enough fat, they were slaughtered by the family. Literally, they lived cheek to jowl. They kept the young piglets, goats as pets, but not for long. Survival overtook. The father and the grandfather before him had shown Bob how to slaughter. Quickly, painlessly, bathed in blood. As a child of 3, he began playing with pig's hearts on the floor. Now, at the age of 12, with a razor-sharp knife in his hand, he cut the throat of his first ever pig and felt the warm blood gush onto his hands. As his father, his grandfather, lifted the pig by its hind legs and put the hook straight through its feet and hung it by the trotters over the red stone wall, it bled into a bucket. He watched, fascinated. He wasn't squeamish in the slightest. He put his hand into the blood. It was like warm water, and he's so thick. It filled and congealed into the bucket, darkening and darkening until it was almost black. This was sold to the neighbours, or sold to the butchers for black pudding. It had to be quick. Because of the summer heat, the flies that collected in their thousands would lay eggs and maggots. They couldn't have this. So, quickly, all 3 of them stripped the carcass down to the bone, their knives moving at such speed they glinted in the light of the sun. They rendered in 3 hours what normally took a full day, a 300-pound pig down to its bare white bone. Soon, Bob the Body was working 6 hours in the morning, 6 hours at night. He was passed around the neighbourhood, quickly became the talk, that he could slaughter faster than anyone. Sheep, pigs, horses, anything. He had four knives and a steel to sharpen. Two massive hooks. 6 days a week. 6 hours in the morning, 6 hours at night. Non-stop. That's where he got his body. Lifting 300 pounds at a time. Onto the backs of doors. Garage doors. They'd slaughter them anywhere. He was passed around. And this piece of red meat muscle. Oh, everyone soon realised his potential. Not just in profit, but as in procreation. The women swooned. And also, the slaughterhouses began to show interest. His forearms, his massive physique. He was soon offered a prominent position in an abattoir as the foreman. They could see that he had a born leadership. He was ready. And he needed more than just working in the street under a blazing sun or in the wet rain. So, this is where he met Stuart. Stuart, what he lacked in brawn, he made up for in brains. And with Bob and his blades, the accounts came in. Stuart's father had a couple of butcher shops. It wasn't long before they were taking backhanders. Bob could spot any cow. Any bullock was bigger than the rest, and bigger than the best. He knew he could get another quarter, even a quarter of a ton from it, without anybody realizing. And soon they were transporting meat up and down the country, to many, many butchers. The money flowed in. And what they couldn't steal, they hustled or poached. Tons of meat each year. Oh, and at Christmas, tills rang with the booty, the bounty. All blood meat. But as always happens, even though Bob was running the team and treating them very well, bonuses were here, there and everywhere. There's always that green-eyed monster. Bob was black-haired, blue-eyed, and a lady killer with a monstrous libido. He got a harem of 7 girls, one each day. Oh, and he was doing so nicely. He was also married to Irene, his school sweetheart. With the nocturnal pursuits, he didn't go unnoticed. And always is the case, and as always happens, sooner or later, somebody drops a dime. And there you be, standing before the boss, answering some very searching questions. And they got him red-handed. All the butcher shops he'd been supplying, they were all written down, all there. Oh, a decade of deceit. He was given his hat and coat along with his cards there and then. The abattoir door was slammed behind him. But as he thought, well, he was young, and still 23. When one door closes, another one opens. He couldn't have cared less. He and his partner, Stuart, they hit the ground running. And with a pliable bank manager called Stan at the William and Glynn's, they set off as new kids on the block. But this time, even though they mentioned the bank manager, they were going into bloodstock and slaughter, they were not. They were moving into the new beast on the block. That was the car. Macmillan, the Prime Minister, Supermac, had told everyone they were going to have a time of their lives. They'd never had it so good. And that was certainly true for these two. And for a decade, in the first 5 years, they controlled the motor industry of Sheffield. They got all the companies, all the finance companies, all the steel companies, all the absolute, every single sweet shop, sewn up. Everything. They supplied and they took their vehicles in part exchange. They had monstrous great slush funds of cash, and they were paying 2% as backhanders to everyone. They ruled the east side. They sold late-plate, low-mileage cars and laundered money. They didn't have enough washing machines to clean it. Ah, it was just a dumping ground for money. The thieves, oh, they loved them. They took everyone on. Every single, the dealers, the drugs, the up-and-coming West Indians, the Pakistanis, all of them. They controlled everything. They left the scraps for the hyenas. There was only offal left. All the prime cuts, just like in the old days, they all went to this partnership. Irene, well, she was now his wife, and she'd bore him two fine, strong sons. Oh, but he was so centred and egotistic. He had very little interest in family life. He did, however, make love morning and night, and noon if Irene wanted it. But she didn't too much care for much of his antics. She was now a Dor and Totley girl. She was the queen of the golf course. She was away from that stench of steel and the sound of those steel hammers pounding the forge. Since 3 years of age, she'd had that beating into her ears. Now she was free. She had a maid, a gardener, a cleaner. Everyone was in place, including her man. He was the king. She was the queen. She worshipped him. So did the boys. They had villas. Portugal, Spain. Ah, and Bob? Well, unfortunately, Robert still had his enormous libido that needed feeding constantly. His office was like a round-the-clock casting couch. 4 times a day. The delivery girls. The blinds would fall like the curtains of a cat club. And he had to feed it. The fetish. Oh, on and on and on. Every single time. He couldn't let one girl go by. He was a major player. Even the accountant was serviced. And she was nothing. She was a plump little dumpy woman, but she had to be serviced. That was just him. Every hoe was a girl and every woman. She was brilliant at accounts. So was Irene, his wife. And if the accountant didn't take care of things, then Irene creatively did. She had a photographic memory. The place was completely bent. Everyone was bent that was in it. In fact, they said, if Bob swallowed a nail, he'd crap out a corkscrew. But still, he was burning with desire, and he burnt the tallow at both ends and onto the table. Every single night, he wasn't back before the witching hour. Irene didn't mind. She may have known there was something going on, but she wasn't bothered. She knew it meant, like a mother before had told her, men need a mistress. Keeps them out of the way. While you're getting your feathers ruffled and the money's pouring in, just run along. And she'd watched it with her own father and mother. So she knew. She was liberal. Irene knew he wouldn't stray. Because she was the queen of Sheba, virtually. Oh, and the accountant. Every time she went on holiday, Irene would correct all her work. She had a photographic memory and absolutely adored anything to do with mathematics. She always had. To her, it was unbelievably simplicity itself. Penny discrepancies. She'd tick red pen like a teacher for the accountant when she came back. Oh, it was... And she went on. She was proud of what she'd achieved, and she was proud of what her husband had achieved. So many offshore shelf companies, hundreds of them. It was a pyramid of deceit, but it ticked along sweetly. The kids were at private school, the best schools. She lavished anything they wanted. Pony clubs, golf clubs, tennis clubs. There were members everywhere, and so was she. And she was beginning to fall into that questionable routine, that rutted routine. But she didn't mind. She didn't want to rock the boat. Let's face it, she was meandering the status quo towards middle age. Ah, it was wonderful. All the slippery deals continued, all the skullduggery. Irene, she just invested the money. Same as the brother-in-law, stocks, shares, and bigger, it was like magnetic. Money just poured into bank accounts. The brother-in-law was a genius on the stock exchange, and so was Irene. She'd watch, but she wouldn't spread bet. She wouldn't carpet bomb. She'd pick out the absolute winners. She studied all the form. She got a kick from it. She loved it. Her husband and the brokers, they threw money away recklessly, but not her. She had her own portfolio, and she was increasing by the millions. Ah, she'd amassed a small fortune. The gambling thrilled her. It was the juice. The money meant nothing. It was that rolling of the dice, that studying all the form, like a horse riding, the insider trading. People pointed the finger, but she didn't need to insider trade. She had a brain like a computer. She knew what numbers were coming up. She was a major player, so much so that Coutts Bank and Zurich, they wanted her in, and she became their favoured number one. But she paid all her tax, unlike her husband and his partner. She kept everything immaculately squeaky clean, just in case. She always had that fear of slipping back into the slum that she'd come from, and it wasn't going to happen. There was no slush fund. She kept it absolutely immaculate and made sure that the tax people knew every single penny and every dime. No recklessness. She squirreled it silently away. She needed it to be there, just in case. Her husband, she knew, was reckless. He bought infinity pools, runway drives, champagne jacuzzis. He couldn't burn it away fast enough. He needed his ego fluffing. She didn't mind. She fluffed it any time he wanted. But she was mellowing into that middle life. She'd now got dignity, decency. She'd almost lost that twang of a strong East Side Yorkshire accent. But he was still up to the nuts in chanteuses and flouses. He'd got the Dorian Gray syndrome. He felt younger and younger and younger, almost immortal. He needed young flesh all the time. Unbeknownst to his wife, he'd almost got to a crisis point. He was running through spunk bunnies and massage parlours like a maniac. Oh, twice, three times a day. He had a doctor standing by on the payroll to cure the clap. He picked it up once every 2 months, 3 months. At least in 6 months he'd have a rosette on the end of his John Thomas. As his partner used to say, you won the first prize again? He told him, do you know, Bob, you could really do with a sort of a penicillin suppository up your ass, trying to cure the clap, the amount of times you get it. He couldn't stop. He needed more and more. And then suddenly one day, he found himself in that unusual midlife crisis. One of these girls had got a hold of him. But she wasn't the usual trollop. Oh no. This one was 19 years of age, gilt-edged. She'd been born with a silver spoon. Well, a golden spoon. A South African from a prestigious family. Oh, he was hooked. She was wealthy. She was foreign. But most of all, she fed every fetish that he'd ever, ever desired. And she forced him on and on and on to do anything he wanted. He couldn't stop. She drained him and pushed him to the limits he'd never been to with any woman before. A teenager, my God. It was like a drug. Oh, everything had changed. For routine, he threw it in the bin. He was fed up with it. His plump, flaccid wife. He'd had enough. And one day, out of the blue, laid in bed, his wife was faffing around with some flower arrangement, as usual. Faffing. He found her a bit frustrating. He suddenly made his mind up. That was it. Darling. Yes? I've been thinking. Oh, yes. I think it's time for me to leave, to get out. The business? Yes, well, I think it's, it's virtually killing you. All work and no play. Those laughter lines, they're getting deeper and deeper. I think it's time you did. Sell it. Sell it all. No, 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 darling. No. No, you're not understanding what I'm saying. What? No, obviously not. What are you on about? I'm leaving you. I'm going to leave you. What? What are you talking about? God's name got into you. Are you mad? The vase that she'd been faffing with. She turned. Her elbow knocked it to the floor and it shattered. She jolted, almost. She looked across at him. He was laid there in silk. Silken robes that she'd bought him for his birthday. Are you losing your marbles? Tell me what you've just said again. What did you just say? Her mind was slowing, as though she was going to be involved in a car accident. It slowed down almost to snail pace. His voice sounded in slow motion. Everything went to slow motion. She looked at him, so bronzed and lean. He looked back, his teeth, cheeky, crossed teeth. She'd almost become hysterical. No, no, no. He looked at her. Look, it's time. We're becoming stale, the pair of us. What are you talking about? She couldn't breathe. She started to hyperventilate. What are you talking about? I don't know what you, God's name, you're on about. We make love twice a day. I know it's not you. It's me. I need to feel myself on the edge. I feel cramped. I'm hemmed in. It's like a cage. I need to get out. I need a new start. You need a new start. Where's this come from? I can't believe what you're saying to me. You can't do this. I've got to do it, or I'm going to be trapped in this situation, this rutted routine of constantly running backwards and forwards, doing the same old... No. No. But it was too late. He made up his mind. He got dressed. She looked at him, silent. Then she ran forward, her gold rings and jewellery hammering onto him, hammering onto the back of his head. You can't leave me. You can't. We've been together since junior school. He gripped her, held her in his massive hands. She flailed, but she couldn't break loose. He pushed her onto the bed. I'm leaving, and that is it. Get it through your head. I'm leaving. She laid there. She couldn't move. She couldn't believe what he'd just said. Suddenly there was another noise. Somebody screaming, mother. It was one of her sons. What's happened? What's happened? What? The noise, the crash, the screaming. What's happened? Has somebody died? You might say that. Who? Me. Your father has just told me he's leaving. After 34 years, he's leaving. We've known each other since we were 10 years of age. He's leaving. Says he needs adventure. egotistic bastard. I'll kill him. No. No. Don't. I've seen what he's made of. You're no match for... He's far too strong for both of you to attack him. Wouldn't do it. He'll kill the pair of you. He comes from the slum, don't forget. But I've never seen that Jekyll and Hyde turn to me. I can't believe what he's just said. Just as though it was nothing. 34 years. 34 years, as though it was nothing. Nothing. We've been married all that time. Her hands shook as though she got the DTs. She could barely swallow with the sand in the back of her throat. My God. I can't believe he's doing this. You're going to have to stay calm. Don't do anything. I'm being serious. I can't believe what he's doing, Mother. Look, just go and find your brother. Tell him what's happened and just give me a little time to just think. 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 Please, just give me a little time. She sat down in front of the mirror. Suddenly, not only was she white as a ghost, but suddenly she saw a middle-aged woman. Her face had almost fallen into folds like a sliced loaf. Lines. She looked so tired. Weak of spirit. Oh. Oh. She put her head in her hands and wept. Chapter 2. Irene was sat in quite a trendy coffee bar. She'd chosen it especially away from her normal crew, where she held court. The Queen Bee, as she was known. But this day she wanted to be alone. She wore a scarf, dark sunglasses. Her eyes were puffed. She hadn't had much sleep. She was peering through the window. She didn't see the man approach. It hurts, doesn't it? She looked up. I beg your pardon. It hurts, doesn't it, when the dreams and shatter and fall apart? When your heart gets broken. Really hurts. Who are you? What do you want? The person in question was about 6'2". Very, very good looking. Pale green eyes. A deep, deep tan. With a slight accent. Are you a foreigner? Listen, I don't need anybody to hit on me. I don't need any... Oh, I'm not about to hit on you or anything. Well, who are you? Let's just say we have a mutual accord. Meaning? We have something in common. Would you allow if I just sit and talk? I don't want company, thank you. I'm not here to chat you up or anything. As I say, we have something in common, which unfortunately is not very pleasant, is it? What do we have in common? Your husband. My husband. Robert. Lily. She looked at him. Are you police, tax or something? What are you? No, not at all. He slid a card towards her. It was embossed. And so? It was gold. Do you not recognize the insignia? You should. Why should I? Look, stop messing me around. Why should I? Tell me who you are. It's not a game of mystery. It's not murder mystery. What do you want? That's my company. South African. You've invested quite a lot of money in it. You should know the insignia. You should even recognize me. You've done enough studying of it, down to the very, very minutiae. And you've certainly invested enough. Thank you. Ah, a Savlon, South Africa, London. Uh-huh. What do you want? Who are you? Well, I'm the company chairman at the moment, shall we say. The boss. Suddenly, Eileen was taken aback. The boss? Yes. You've come all the way to see me about my stocks and shares here, because I've invested a considerable amount of money into your... Is that usual? It's not about that I've come across. It's not about that. It's about your husband. I'm here. What about him? He's left you. Yes, I'm fully aware of that. Yes, and so am I. I've done an in-depth, minute study of you and your husband. Have you indeed? And you're not tax? No. No, I own the company. I can give you some more proof if need be. No, it doesn't matter. Just get on with it. Well, you see, your husband happens to be having an affair with my daughter, who's 19 and is studying here. Ah, I see. Yes. But I don't think you do really see the full picture. They've been having a long affair for quite some time. I didn't realise. I've only been given the documentation and photographs. It's hard when your heart's broken, isn't it? When you've nurtured a precious something like love all your life to find that it's being defiled almost raped. Listen, I'm not the part of it. I know you're not. But in a sense you are. You're a major player and a major part of it. I don't dislike you at all. Of course I dislike your husband for what he's doing. But I need your help. He looked at her. And she couldn't believe that in his eyes, in those beautiful, with such sorrow. You see, she happens to be my only daughter, and I don't want to lose her. I don't want to lose everything. This is almost... I lost my wife a few years ago to the big C, breast cancer. She was the love of my life also. So you can imagine how precious my daughter is to me. I don't want to lose her just because your husband wants to somehow relive his teenage years. Do you understand? I do. I do. I can now begin to understand how devastated you would be. This is a stupid teenage thing. She obviously sees in your husband me, a powerfully successful, although your husband is a mere grain of sand in comparison to... Well, I'm not blowing my own trumpet, but you know the size of the company. It's a grain of sand compared to what I've managed to... I may have been, shall we say, a little... Not selfish. She's been lavish with every single thing she's ever needed, but probably not enough guidance in love. But I've come up from virtual slum backgrounds, slaughterhouses and steel foundries, and just like your husband, we are similar. Probably give off the same pheromones, hence why my daughter's, well, fallen so deeply in love with him. But I can't let it continue. You and I are going to have to bring this to, unfortunately, a close. It is just a teenage dream tragic scene that will end with your husband doubtless moving to the next teenager or whatever he wants to move on to. I don't want him destroying my daughter, and I don't want her doing anything ridiculous. But I do want an engineer, a close. So we do have a mutual interest. Yes, I suppose you could say that. More than that. Yes. So, I want help. I need your help to do it. I have everything in place. I've been working on it for almost a year. Not just me. An entire team of private investigators and the Secret Service. The Secret Service? Oh, yes. I can muscle any help I need. Not only the South African Secret Service, but also MI5 and MI6. We know everything, and every single penny piece, and where it's been placed. Now, I don't want to pull this down. I don't want to see it come down around your ears, or your husband's. But I will pull it down. I will pull the curtain down blazing to get my daughter back. I want you to help me somehow break it. I want her back with me in South Africa. I see. So you've got everything. We've got every single thing. Every single penny that's ever been squirreled away. You're fine. We know that. You're squeaky clean. In fact, I have more than admiration for you. In fact, if you don't mind me saying, I have become very attracted. Very, very attracted. I'm not hitting on you or anything. But from where you've come from, I have also come from that. From the absolute slums of sorts. Similar to you. And I have built up and up and up. Until I'm here. I have fought tooth and nail. Hammer chisel. To get where I am. And my daughter is the only thing I have in my life. The rest of it is just gold and it's nothing. It's mere dust. My daughter. To you. You get what I'm saying. Like your two sons. Do you understand? The company searches that we've done on all the hundreds of shell companies around the world where the money is that your husband and yourself. I'm going to leave you with this brief, as it be, this box full of brief. And all the, unfortunately, the background material, photographs and videotapes that unfortunately I have to give you. They have virtually destroyed me. They will do the same to you. But you must look at them. You must. What must I do? You must feel the hatred to do what we've got to do. You also must feel this absolute hatred. It's hard. But I'll help. I will help you through this. But even to get him back, I can get your husband back for you. I can get him back for you. But we have to break him. We have to have him on his knees broken. Then you can have him back. But while ever he's got this libido, this money, this everything, we have got to almost financially castrate him. You come right out of a... Are you some sort of joke box or something? Do you realise what he means to me? The loyalty I have for him. I know. Look, listen, read at your leisure what I'm leaving you, this box of briefs and tapes. That's my card, my number's on the back. Have a look at it for 48 hours. then come back to me. All the minutiae is there, the background, the lot. All your assets and all what we have to do. Unfortunately, I don't want to do it. But they won't stop unless we do pull this down around their ears. Then you get your husband back and I get my daughter back. Okay? She stared at him blankly. She just couldn't believe what had happened in the last week. Did you know he was going to leave me? Oh yes, that's in there too. We knew on precisely what day. It's all been planned. You mean he knew? Oh, everything is there. Step by step, moment by moment, sentence by sentence. They talk about it. They talk about everything. I am ever so sorry, but you are going to have to read it. My beautiful, beautiful man. I know. And my beautiful, beautiful daughter. Oh, this is... Oh, I feel so drained and tired and old. You're not old. You're a beautiful, beautiful woman. Oh, I think we've said enough beautifuls between us, don't you? He then touched her. His hand was huge. His teeth huge and white. He was very, very good looking. Butterflies in his stomach. My God. He touched her cheek. He was as swift as a leopard. His feet moved like a dancer. He caught her as though she'd be some sort of Thompson gazelle, held her round the waist, put his hand to her cheek and looked deep into her with such a strength that it almost shocked her. It was raw animal. Oh. Listen, I will look after you. Do not worry. I will treat you as precious as my daughter. I know how it feels. I have been through shrink. I have been laid on that many psychiatrists' couches. They don't work. But I can guide you. I can guide you. We can do it. You can have your husband and all his money. And you can put a lead and a collar around his neck. And you will have everything. We can do it together. But I must have you with me. No contact with your husband. I don't believe this. Believe it. Read the brief. There's two secret services. Put it together along with a dozen PIs. I'll see you next Friday. Same place here. How do I know? You know. How do I know I can trust you? You know. I tell you what. You get everything. It says it in there and how to do it. You get everything. I don't get a penny. I just want my daughter back. Okay. I'll read it. Good. This is so hard, you know. I know. But you're strong. You know where you've come from, and so do I. And you know where I've come from. You've done all the work cards on me. And I've done all the work cards on you. I just can't believe that he has done this to me. I know. But we'll get through it. Until Friday. Take care. Chapter 3. Irene had called her South African saviour on the Thursday afternoon to arrange a Friday morning meeting. They met at the same quiet cafe, but this time She was business. She brought the mathematical side of her mind, not the catastrophic romantic side that had been engulfed in tears and turmoil for the last 6 months. Jan didn't bother asking her welfare. He could tell by the power dress that she was ready for action. They sat at the table at the back of the cafe and laid out their briefs in front of each other. It was like a Monday morning meeting in the boardroom for Jan. He'd done it 100 times before. So had she with her husband. But Jan had had a team of PIs, lawyers and Secret Service put everything together, itemising it for a perfect strike. Irene liked the discipline, his approach to correctness. She had actually put a few mistakes, corrected a few mistakes on each page, which he found intriguing that somebody could remember this from 2 decades previous. Numbers, facts, telephone numbers. He wondered if she really did have a photographic memory. He was very impressed. He could see now why Zurich and Coutts Bank, along with many other brokerage houses, had offered her a job. He'd like to do the same himself. He opened the conversation. Right, let's get down to business. Eunice Stewart and Robert, obviously, the partners in crime here, have, unfortunately, shall we say, they're under the illusion that they can walk on water forever. I used to think that myself. Though what amazes me is there's 2 very good business minds here, but they've made the monstrous mistake of allowing their greed to run away with them. They've clouded the issue completely. It's no good me saying anything against them, because I've bit off more than I can chew over the years myself, but not made such a catastrophic mistake as these two seem to have made. I mean, Stuart, without telling Robert, has leveraged and borrowed a huge amount of money. 40 million to move into trying, I think, to become a big sort of property player. He's moved all the money out of the car side and refinanced that with auction loans and it's ridiculous. I mean, it's like the refinancing and stocking loans. I've tried what he's doing and it doesn't work. Every new month that comes around, you watch. Soon as the clocks, you lay awake and watch. Soon as the clock strikes 12, that's why we call them Cinderella loans. Everything around you turns into pumpkins and rats. The beautiful golden carriages that it all turns pear shaped. They take so much money away from you, and you don't realise what's happening until you're too deep in, which is what they are. I mean, he's took all the equity out of the car dealerships and placed it into the building of houses, shops and warehousing, as you've seen. This is the biggest problem. And now, of course, the government has made a little bit of a hash of their financing, and the rates are going up due to inflation, the dreaded spectre of inflation. But what I can understand. I can see what you've done. You've spent your divorce. You've lent your divorce settlement of just under £10 million to Stuart as a bridging loan. Yes. I mean, is that? Well, that's just because business is business. I mean, He offered me 3 dealerships, the brand new dealerships, the big ones that have just been built. I've took 5. Their value, without any stock whatsoever, is guaranteed at £24 million. Yes, but once this curtain comes down in flaming glory around their ears, you might have to wait 2 years to get your money back. Everything will be frozen, don't forget. Yes, but it's a fantastic opportunity to double your money. I mean, do you have that? Oh, you know I have that. 10 times that amount. I do. So you can afford to lose that for years. Why, are you thinking you're offering me a loan or something? I would offer you a loan. I don't need it, don't worry. She knew she was razor sharp, and so did he. But they got down to business. They knew what they'd come for, as he did look at her with those golden pinprick predatorial eyes and said, "You are with me on this. You're not going to get sentimental and pull out halfway through or anything like that, are you?" "Oh no. This is the only way to get me to get my daughter back and you to get your husband back. You realize that?" "Oh yes. Oh yes. But Stuart, I mean, he's going to be left with a begging bowl. You're not thinking, of crying any tears over him, are you?" "No. Good. So we can move ahead with this, yeah?" "Oh, no problem, yes. No problem. Unfortunately, I mean, I'm not sadistic. I don't want vengeance or anything. But I do want to go ahead with it." "Good. Stuart's in a very precarious position. Well, they both are. They're 40 million of equities now tied up in concrete footings, in sludge and concrete footings, with no bricks and mortar and rooftops, and you can't actually get out. The biggest mistake they've made is because if it was, metal, mild steel, as in cars, you can move it straight to an auction, get your money out of it within 2 weeks. You can pay the bank and stop them flapping. But now, it's before these ever get ready, they'll never be ready. You can't get out. They're trapped for months and months. They're going to feel the anaconda slowly crushing them, and they will go quietly insane. Jan and Irene knew this, of course, because they'd actually put the plan together. Well, Jan and his team had put the plan together, but the main players they were going to rely on is the Fraud Office and the Inland Revenue. They were going to be the big freeze and the big anaconda to come in and crush and crash everything to the ground. All the companies, the shelf companies, the offshore bank accounts, everything would be seized. Jan, well, he was a genius at asset stripping companies. Eileen knew this oh too well. He bankrupted more companies than actually set up, just to strip them. Together, they packed away their portfolios. One of them they kept, obviously, and the other was posted to the Inland Revenue Fraud Reporting Department. Yes, that was it. How long do you think it'll take? Nah, it'll take a couple of weeks before these guys move on it, but we've itemized it so well. They really, really don't need to do anything. It's all digitalized now. They can check every single thing. That's the problem. They're working in an old format. They think it's all still cash, which a lot of it to them is, but unfortunately, it's a touch of a keyboard, as you know. And these two local mafia muscle men, they might parade through this parish as something special, but believe me, by the time the Inland Revenue are finished with them, they'll be sort of paraded through the parish, unfortunately, as pariahs. Penny pariahs at that. I tell you what we ought to do, because I mean, we're in too close a proximity to them, in actual fact, here in Sheffield. I think I don't suppose you fancy skipping town for a few weeks, maybe a couple of months, to the sun. I have a lot of property here, there in Spain and Europe. I have a sensational place in Puerta Banús that we can probably take the ghastly telephone calls and catch a little bit of sun. That does sound very inviting. Well, what do you think? I'm not hitting on you. I'm just, it's available. I know it is. I've seen it. I've seen what you've got. I know everything about you, and you know everything about me. Yes. But while the bullets are sort of flying, we don't want to be around the OK Corrales, as it were. We might get hit by a couple of ricochets. You never know, the fraud office might want to speak to us. But if we're abroad, then we can't be pulled in at a moment's notice to give any embarrassing covering questions and things and to the facts and figures. And they could, they would want you there, but if you're abroad, then they wouldn't really be bothered. And they've got everything they need, it's just that they may want to pull you in. She liked him. She thought Jan was a good man, apart from obviously being a very predatorial animal where companies were concerned. But at least he wasn't some sort of lone timber wolf like her husband that was howling around the place in a selfish sex sort of fetish. She liked his loyalty, his stability. He liked her for that reason. He liked how she dissected things similar to what he. Their minds work very, very similar. He could do with a loyal business partner, especially a woman that was as razor sharp as she was. Yeah, she'd built her husband's empire and built herself an empire. Zurich Bank and Coutts were confirming that to him. He knew all the inside team. He'd use them for insider dealing. She'd never strayed for 30 years. She'd always stuck loyally by her husband, even though he'd played the field like a fool every day. She knew that now. The happy massages, the thousands of affairs, daily affairs, four different parts girls, even the accountant. He didn't intend to lose this woman. She was one in 10 million. He wanted her not as a lover, but he wanted her around. They flew off to Spain. They'd been there 5 days, almost a week, before the first phone call came in. It was on a Sunday morning. Surprisingly, she knew it was her husband by the numbers on the phone. Plus, he didn't sound anything like the deep resonating voice at all. He seemed to have moved up an octave to a very gaspy, raspy, distorted voice. Irene, it's me. Yes, it is you. What do you want? You're abroad. Calm down, you sound a bit panicky. What's the matter? You're abroad. Yes, I'm abroad. I don't need any permission now. We're divorced. Well, I know that, but I didn't expect you to be abroad. Why not? Why not? I'm a lady of leisure now. Irene looked across towards her saviour. He was busy reading the Financial Times. She raised an eyebrow. Where are you exactly? What? Oh, I'm in Spain, Puerto Banús. Right. I'm just wondering. Yes. I was just wondering. I'm in a lot of trouble here. What sort of trouble? Well, I've got the bloody feds right up my arse. The who? The Inland Revenue, the fraud squad, everything's here on Sunday morning to. You think they'd have left it till Monday? They're here. Crack of dawn, 5:30 this morning. Dawn raid? Yes. The fraud squad? Yes. The Inland Revenue on a Sunday? Yes, I know it sounds. It's serious. It sounds serious.
But it's happened many times before. You don't need to panic. You know what it's all about. It's, you've been investigated, for heaven's sake. Irene, this is it. This is it. Ugh, it's always it. No, you don't understand. The ruddy balloon's gone up. I mean, properly gone up. Oh, you always say that. Oh, don't panic. It's not the Titanic. No, it's not the bloody Titanic. It's the Hindenburg times 10. The balloon has gone up. It's burst.
Well. Oh. She was play acting, of course, doing a marvellous job.
Well, I hope you've not. I hope you've not lost my divorce settlement money. What do you mean your divorce settlement money? What do you mean? I've invested it back into the company with Stuart. You've done what? I beg your pardon. Yes, I thought Stuart may have told you. I know we're not particularly on speaking terms, but the 10 million that I got, the 9.8 million pounds, I've sort of put back in the operation there. No, Stuart didn't tell me. Well, he stuck it as a bridging loan for some property scheme that you're involved in. Oh my God! Is that what you were calling for? Yes, I was calling for that, but I wanted it myself as a bridging loan. They've frozen all the accounts, they've frozen every single thing. Oh, well, no, he's already got it. It's obviously been frozen with your lot, is it? Oh, my God. Well, don't worry about that. Use the offshore stuff. Use the Jersey or whatever. You've got the, credit cards for that. Use Jersey or the Isle of Man. No, they've frozen those as well. Oh, Jesus Christ. What have you done? I suppose they've seized up. So they've seized everything, including mine. Yes. Oh, I didn't think of that. No, doubtless you didn't. So everything's frozen. So all you're thinking about is, I'm all right, Jack. Can I, get a bit more money out of me? Is that what you hear? Well, I'm stuck. I'm stuck. Well, phone Stuart. I have. He's in custody too. Oh, dear. Is that where you are? Yes, I'm in the bloody custody suite. This is the only, really, the one phone call I can make. Oh, why didn't you call the solicitor or the accountant, for heaven's sake? Well, because they're here with me. Oh. Oh, you don't understand. This is the big one. What about your brother-in-law? He's here too. He's in handcuffs. He kicked off to such an extent they put handcuffs on him and gassed him. Oh, that does sound serious. Too bloody right it's serious. They've cautioned us 3 times. I'm in my dressing gown. They stripped the house. The dressing gown I bought you for your birthday. Yes, the dressing gown. Listen, who gives a shit about what gown I'm wearing? Yes, it's that... Oh, well, listen. I'll speak to you when you've regained possession of yourself. You sound stressed out to hell. I can't do anything for you if they've seized everything. But have you got any spare money? No. Irene hung up. It sounds very distraught. Yes. Yes. Very distraught. I've just come off the phone myself to a young woman called my daughter, who's also very, very distraught. She's obviously seen... She's in floods of tears. She's obviously seen that your ex-husband as a Jekyll and Hyde side, shall we say. He's blown up and gone raging like a madman, frightened her to death. Yes, well, you can take the man out of the slum, but you can't take the slum out of the man, can you? He always did lose his head under pressure. Yes. Anyway, well, I read somewhere that... Aren't you a bit of a water baby? What? Forget then what's happening there. The Inland Revenue and Fraud Office are going to take care of that. We don't need to get too stressed out ourselves. My PIs and all the rest of the team can handle that. You can... you're a good skier, aren't you? How did you know that? Your team are good, aren't they? Yes. You had a boat on Windermere. Used to go up there at the weekends and monoski. Do you fancy a little pull behind my jet ski across the bay? Have a little bit of breakfast across there? That sounds like a good idea. A very, very good idea. Yes. What about if I just ride up close behind you? What about if you do? I wouldn't mind you as a pillion passenger any time, any day of the week. You can wrap your arms around me and just strap yourself onto my engines, as they say. I'd like to do that. You are naughty. Well, you sure you want your little doggy back? Well, I think you're a little bit too big. You're a rather large doggy for me. A huge big Rhodesian ridgeback like you. I mean, you're a lion killer, aren't you? I don't think I've got a collar strong enough or a leash or a choker strong enough to hold you. Oh, don't worry about me. My wife, she house trained me very, very well. I'm very disciplined. I'm ready for crusts, as they say. Really? Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I'll be your doggy any day of the week. You naughty. Woof, woof. You are very naughty. I might take you a little walkies. Come on, let's go.